episode 69.
69! My favorite number by all accounts of my 12-year-old self. Yeah. And today we're talking about The Blackening here on All the Horrible Things. And this is by no means a horrible movie. In fact, it's excellent, but it is. This is what I wanted to ask you at the top here with The Blackening. Genre-wise, do you consider it more of a parody or more a legitimate slasher?
To me, it feels like a parody. I think it's a parody of the genre, and I think it's a... Yeah, it's a great question because it's a more of a comedy horror than it is a horror comedy, you know, which yes, then definitely pushes it more.
I struggle because to me, something like Scary Movie, overtly parody. To me, this doesn't go to that nth degree in the same way Scary Movie does.
Yeah.
And to me, it's more of like a satirical slasher. That's kind of what I would consider it. Because it's doing all the same things slashers do, and certainly slashers have these funny moments too. It just happens to have a lot more humor than your normal slasher. But I think it's making light of tropes in very interesting ways. I can't put it in the parody category for some reason, because I think it's completely different than the scary movie films.
Yes, it is. It's definitely a... I mean, the scary movies are like the epitome of satirical, but also, yes, parody. This movie isn't necessarily a parody, but it is satirical in the sense that it's not only playing into horror movie tropes, but certainly African Americans in cinema. I mean... Obviously, they're leaning into the horror here, and the opening sequence, they do a nod to the camera almost. You know, when Jay Farrow, they're making fun of Scream 2, and they said, I don't think that they
Hit me with the Scream 2 reference.
The Scream 2 reference is, remember the opening sequence to Scream 2? We've got the people are in the movie theater watching Stab.
Right.
So let me get actors' names correct here, because it's really funny. I think it's Omar Epps and Jada Pinkett Smith are a couple.
Right.
And they go to the bathroom. They're both killed in this movie theater.
Yes. But in The Blackening, Omar goes to the bathroom. He hears some weird...
Yeah.
And he's like, listens, what's going on in that stall next to me? And then, of course, he gets the knife through the stall door. Those are made of like hardcore plastics. I don't know how you're getting through that. Into his ear. You're absolutely right. And then does he just straight up die there, or does he stumble back in? And he's like, because he comes back with the mask, but it's not him. He's dead. He's dead in the bathroom.
Right.
And then the killer comes and sits next to Jada and stabs her in the belly. And then she goes, okay, you're absolutely right in that sense. It does follow that same trope.
But they do a nod to the camera. Jay Farrow, they were talking about how that they thought those two were only killed off because they couldn't afford them to be in the rest of the movie. And they're
– right.
It's a moment. It's very tongue-in-cheek. They look at the camera, maybe not directly into the lens, but they turn out towards us, the audience. And moments like that, when you kick off a movie, I think you're sort of setting the tone. And
so Jay Farrow, and who was the lady at the top who was clearly more expensive than others?
I don't know her. I think
is that Yvonne Orji?
Her character's name is Morgan.
Morgan. Okay. What has she been in? The Insecure, I guess. 42 episodes. So that is such a popular show. She's going to be
comedian.
Definitely more costly, but she does kind of pop up again though, unlike Jay. But to be honest with you, why wouldn't have Jay gotten a bigger part? Because I know everyone knows him from SNL, but I'm not seeing him all over the place, you know?
I mean, it certainly could have been availability, or they pitched him the idea that you're going to be you're going to basically be our Drew Barrymore in the opening sequence of Scream, you know, like you're our celebrity recognizable face who we only had one day to shoot with. We put you in the beginning, you get the laughs, and then you're not in the movie.
And he does an impression, which is pretty much Jay Farrow's one angle from my perspective. I remember, I don't know if I should be kissing and telling here, but you know, we both know Lamorne Morris, and Lamorne and Jay, around the time that Jay got SNL, were kind of in contention for that slot. So I don't know. I love Lamorne, you know. So I got a little.
Let's just say
weirdness around Jay.
I hear you. I mean, that's the business, right? And I understand what you mean. But it certainly worked out really great for Lamorne to get
that's New for Girl. Sure. Touche.
Yeah. So things happen for a reason, and Jay Farrow, who I think is still, you know, as far as like a comedic actor goes, his impressions are very, very
his impressions good. Are insanely good. He's amazing at that. I'm not going to discount that.
But there's only so much abilities, you can do.
Yes. A little pitter patter behind the scenes sort of thing, blah, 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 blah. So honestly, I'm very happy with the cast that is the majority of this film because they're all pitch perfect. And this is the other reason that I would argue that it's not a parody. And I would consider it more just straight satirical slasher is because all of these characters are not stock. They are all so fleshed out well, maybe with the exception of Urkel. But then Urkel does have that extra dynamic about him. Because this movie really could be called Urkel's Revenge, you know?
How about this? As far as stock characters go, the white actors are very appropriately parody. You know, you have they refer to him as Texas Chainsaw in the store, which cracked me up. The guy with the one eye working the store. Diedrich Bader, who I think is very funny.
He's great. He's so diverse, too.
Yes. But in my opinion, you know, those characters were your cliche characters, which was great.
Great moment when he's trying to call for backup, and his last name is White.
Yes,
White. Where he just repeats his name over again because he can't get through. Because
overly, I'm just gonna say White.
yes, that was very funny. I love that dude. I mean, going back,
so good.
But the most recent thing that I've seen him in that I love him in that I think people aren't caught wind of yet is Bob Odenkirk's new show. Where he's an English professor. It's something Unlucky Hank or something, I want to say it is. I'm not sure if that first adjective is right, but Hank's in the title. AMC, great show. He's his philosopher teacher, BFF. And it's like a part you haven't really seen Diedrich Bader do. So I highly suggest catching up.
No, yeah.
Something Hank.
I was very happy to see him play the sheriff in this. And I really feel like this movie opens up very similar to a lot of this is kind of why I was saying leaning more in towards like a parody. It's hitting the beats of a slasher so perfectly where you have the stop off on the way there at the general store. You go to the cabin in the woods. I thought they did a really great job of, you know, setting it into this world that we all know. The cabin in the woods horror.
Completely agree in terms of just the overall premise. Absolutely. But here's where I feel like it diverges then. In an instance where, you know, we have them splitting up. They shouldn't be splitting up ever in a movie like this, or they're being chased by the killers. In a parody, it would be kind of like emphasized that what they're doing is stupid. But in this, it's more of a meta. They're talking about it. And knowing that they shouldn't be doing it. And that to me is where it becomes more satire, self-referential than a parody, which would then be taking that, which is done in other films and ridiculing it less, I guess, philosophically as they do it.
Very
in this
true.
One.
Very true. And that moment is another great Diedrich Bader scene where he's like, you guys are so splitting good. Up.
Yes.
Very funny. Very funny.
Well, you mentioned right before we started this that this director is prolific, Tim Story. I mean, when you're going to let that last name, how do you not go into the storytelling field?
Right. You know, you kind of have to. And luckily, this guy has been, you know, I think working every year since he started, you know, and the guy started off in music videos. I think it's really interesting it's such a common thing for film directors to do is start off, or at least when you start in the 90s and you move into the 2000s, you started on your Total Request Live stuff. Right. Like, I think he did some NSYNC. I think he did some Casey and JoJo. And then, you know, his film career really takes off when, after all of these music videos, he starts getting like Barbershop, Taxi, Fantastic Four. And then Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer. I think he did both of the Fantastic Four
movies.
He did both. And then, you know, he's got some really, really great career of action and comedy.
Action comedies, you know, which are like one of the hardest genres to really pull off effectively.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think he was a great...
Only a couple missteps in here, right? before I talk about missteps... Yes, I mean, Tom and Jerry, what's going on? Because that's pretty recent. And The Blackening is so freaking good, but Tom and Jerry precedes this. That's a good question, though. Who is your favorite director that started around the same time as Tim Story that started with music videos who then became prolific film actor?
Well, you've got Spike Jonze. You've got Michel Gondry.
Yeah.
You've got somebody.
And Kaufman. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah.
That little and then zone. There's. Yeah. I'm Spike Jonze. 100%.
Spike Jonze. Absolutely. But then you've got people like Mick G, who started off in music videos. And, you know, then he did the Charlie Angels movies. And now he's doing horror. He did like the Babysitter. These are long careers for these guys.
Right. It's a good place to start, you know, the networking that potentially is there. Undeniable. Well, we talked about Mr. Story. Let's talk about some of these players. Have you seen any of them before? Who stuck out to you the most?
Not to get to Hollywood name droppy, but I know Dwayne Perkins, who wrote the movie and stars in it.
Steals the movie, really.
Yes. Dwayne started in Chicago and stand-up and sketch comedy. He did Second City. And he was actually really a part of this group that broke off and I believe did some stuff with Comedy Central. And I believe is probably where this idea spawned from. There's another great character named Namdi. He is someone else I know. They must have based the character and name off of him. He does a lot of stuff in comedy still, but I think it kind of comes from, that's why I'm looking at it from this point of view, as it being satirical and comedic because of the writer coming from a place of comedy.
And I got to point out that ex-Mayo, the girl who plays Shanika, she was a writer on The Daily Show for years and years. So you mentioned the Comedy Central connection, so you could really see how these guys all coalesce together. And again, The Daily Show, you know, has that parody and satire, kind of walk in the line like this one does as well. Right. Yeah, I don't think there was a bad player in the bunch. Personally, I felt like everybody was bringing it.
I completely agree. I loved the actor who played King. I thought the actor Grace Byers, who plays Allison, was fantastic. Maybe my favorite was Allison.
She's the interesting one character who took in that. She was the multicultural character. Yes. We'll talk about the Adderall stuff in a minute because you know, you're always going to have some nitpicky stuff when you're watching something, and that might have been one of mine. She was great, and she's certainly dealing with being half African-American, half white, and the pressures that come with that, and what she's like, they don't consider her whole black and she's not considered whole white. And the idea of who's the blackest is such a big part of what makes this movie. It was, you know, there is additional layer, certainly not to the level of like a Get Out. Are we dealing with profound issues? One could say, but I do think it's touching on stuff that is important to talk about.
Definitely.
And horror is the best venue to be talking about these things, if you ask me, without being heavy-handed.
Completely agree. It is the perfect genre for, you know, satirical. And I want to ask you what your first impression, because the board game itself is a character. Yes. Did it remind you of anything else?
Jumanji?
Yes. Yes. I was going to say, if I had to describe this movie, it's like Cabin in the Woods meets Jumanji.
Cabin in the Woods. That's a really good point. I wanted to talk about kind of the other references. And I do now remember the Scream 2 one, but there's a Scream 1 reference in here. Did you catch that?
I don't know if I did. Maybe.
Okay, so when they kill the first of the two twins wearing this horrible leather blackface mask, right?
Yes. Okay.
King's character kind of gets beat down pretty good, and then when he gets up, our Adderall laced heroin takes him down, and then he's standing there holding the truth, saying, "I'm feeling woozy here."
Oh, yeah.
Like the best line in all of Scream, they pulled in there. He is kind of a Stu-esque character who's not
a killer. Yes.
So I appreciated that. I thought that was great.
I mean, I think that's what was so great about this movie is it's inspired and influenced by other horror movies. I mean, they referenced the sunken place from Get Out in here. And
yes. do you remember in the context of that was?
I'm trying to remember as I said that. I'm like, I know it
is another reason why it's not parody to me, because you have these really great interpersonal dynamics between the characters showcased at the beginning of the movie before all the murder ensues. And it's when you have Nambi's character and King's character outside sipping upon the overly sweetened Kool-Aid, the cool A.
Yeah, right.
And it turns out that King does have a white girlfriend, and Nambi's kind of giving him shit for that. And then
I think he married a white woman. Like, yeah.
Yes. He married a white Armenian girl, which they talk about whether or not. That's
right.
But he is all like, "Oh man, you're balls deep in that sunken place."
Yes. Yes. There it is.
Hilarious. Really funny stuff. People under the stairs is mentioned at the top too, in that first scene.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I would throw in Saw into this, you know, with the challenges that they have to compete. Yes. So it's like Jumanji meets Saw meets Cabin in the Woods. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. The game itself, I mean, it's funny, you know, and how offensive it is. But the one question about name five African Americans that have been in Friends.
Oh my gosh.
Hilarious. Oh, and I do gosh. Like how each of the questions like was kind of tailored for each of their characters. You know, Nambi knew the lyrics from the rap song that was referenced. Mm. And I did find it interesting that Clifton like answered one before even all the options were like put out there.
Right.
This is where Clifton becomes very suspicious, and I'm not going to lie.
Yes.
Where it does then become a little less potent is the predictability of Clifton being our killer.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, as soon as this guy walks into the cabin and they say, "Who invited you?" And he's like, "I got an e-vite from Morgan, I think." And it's like, that doesn't sound real. It doesn't sound like you were actually invited. And you start to look at Clifton a little bit differently. And
I did like that you have Clifton there in the convenient mark at the beginning where you have one of the counters brother working behind the counter. I mean, yes, it moves well. And I do enjoy his motive, but we don't have to jump to his motive quite yet.
No, we don't have to do that yet. But how about when they're all playing the game and he says he voted for Trump twice?
Twice! Well, this is the interesting aspect where they're talking about who's the blackest, and that's the one they're going to send out to get murdered,
right?
He's clearly, in stereotypical sense, the least if you're voting for Trump twice.
And yet
he still gets sent out there, which then kind of, you know, you feel sorry for him, and you kind of understand why he's gotten to the point he has with these people.
I didn't feel bad for him as soon as he said, "All lives matter," when he shuts the door. What an asshole. Yes. Like, he's so pissed at them. He throws that out there and then closes the door. It's like this guy.
So the question is, did they make him this way? Did they make him what he is?
Yeah, we can get into that a little bit later. But there was a moment when they're playing the game and they're going through X amount of rounds. And I was really in that moment wondering, you know, this is like your second act. Like, what's going to happen? Like, what's where's this movie going? Are we just going to see more trivia game? Yeah. And it kind of slows down there, not in a bad way, because the questions really are funny. Like, I mean, I'm not even remembering all the trivia, but it was just ridiculous.
One was like, who is Sojourner Truth?
Yeah. Aunt Viv from Fresh Prince.
Yeah.
When did Aunt Viv?
They were all really well written. But then you did have the TV where you then have Morgan's character from the beginning all tied up. And as much as this is a slasher, like with the exception of the two at the beginning, none of them die.
Now you're right.
With the exception of the villain. And we're not even sure about whether or not Cliff is dead.
There, again, I know we're going back and forth here about satirical versus, you know, is this movie grounded? But when King gets shot with the arrow, and then he gets shot in the exact same place, and then Allison pulls it out and stabs herself. I mean, very funny moments. Like,
it really was.
I think they're just
True. That's where it walks the line of just ridiculousness.
Well, I think they're taking shots, no pun intended, at other horror movies. Are like, you got shot in the exact same spot.
Right. That's true. And at this point, she had taken the Adderall, right? So she was kind of like overly jumpy and jerky.
Oh, here's something I wanted to ask you, because it's been mentioned already, is that, you know, the brothers wearing the masks. I was really like, I always get excited about a slasher movie when you're going to see the killer and like what style of mask they're wearing. Yes. What imagery did it evoke for you? Like, 'cause I like to think that, you know, slasher characters have like their own origin story and what their mask might mean.
Yes.
'Cause to me, I always thought they might be leaning into blackface.
Yes, I do. I do. And I've read a couple things about it. I think it was purposefully looking like a leather blackface mask.
Okay.
100%. Okay. And then that marries up so well with the face that's in the middle of the blackening game board. Yeah. But then when you just offered that question, I immediately went to Pulp Fiction, you know, with the gimp suit. And it seems like it's been like an altered version of that. And based on how their basement looks, I wouldn't put it past these two brothers to be doing kinky, horror-y sort of weirdness in that basement.
You said that, it reminded me that in the movie People Under the Stairs, you've got like the creepy couple, and the man wears a leather mask as well. like an S&M mask. So maybe there are origins pulled.
It was
from
a consciously loaded. It was a good choice. I feel like.
Yeah, I agree.
But okay, here's my question to you. Going back to Clifton's motivation, before we get into that, just what is your favorite revenge of the nerd horror, if you have one?
Oh, interesting. I mean, There's so much out there, right? I mean, you could say that Carrie kind of is one.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And although Carrie's revenge plot happens like almost instinctively revenge horror means to me that somebody was wronged as a child, and
time has passed, and you're plotting and they out have their demise.
Yes, right. Yes. I'd really have to think about that. I
had to look at the list. I'm going to give you this short list that I came up with, and I haven't seen a lot of them, if I'm honest with you. Killer Speak. Have you heard of Killer Speak?
No.
976 Evil.
Yes, that's actually
what is that?
Yeah, I honestly think that might be a New Year's Eve movie too, but that's a revenge. I haven't seen that in so long. I can picture the poster in my head with the receiver on it, but I'll keep going. I'm thinking it's
Slaughter High.
Yes, I've seen Slaughter High. Slaughter High is the one where and the killer is wearing like a Letterman jacket and a almost like a jester style mask. It's very low budget 80s movie. It's entertaining though.
These two are a little iffy for me. The next two I'd mention, I don't know if The Fly quite qualifies. I mean,
that's okay. We're really leaning in here because he's a scientist. We're associating he's a nerd because he's a scientist. That to me
well,
is like
the 80s if you're a scientist.
Okay, that's just mean.
What about Herbert West from The Reanimator? Because we've definitely talked about that one.
That's another kind of, I mean, yes, he is another bit of a nerd. I think his revenge is mostly coming from just dislike and hatred. I don't know. I guess he's kind of.
Wasn't he kind of like creepy with women too? Like the nerd angle, like he was never going to get women in that sort of nerd angle. Yeah. The first Fright Night, I really kind of only can remember the newer one. I don't remember the OG Fright Night too well.
Yeah,
does the OG that have elements of nerd revenge?
I mean, again, I think you're just kind of classifying a character as a nerd because he's not in the popular group. I wouldn't say that that's revenge, though. I think that's sort of evolves into a stumbling upon my neighbor's a vampire. I think so far Slaughter High is the
Slaughter High is the best example here.
Yeah.
I'll just prattle off the next ones. Better Watch Out. Don't know what that is. Toxic Avenger. That's pretty. That stands out, right? And Lawnmower Man and Misery are these iffy Stephen King ones where you kind of got these more disconnected figures that end up.
Yeah, I think those are problems. Stretches. We're really stretching those.
Yeah,
to be.
I think they are probably stretches too. And actually, when I was doing a little research on these, a lot of people said, well, all the killers and screamer nerds. I'm like, not really.
That's because it was the 90s. I mean, you're just saying.
If you go back, Scream 1, neither of them are nerds. They hang out with a nerd, which
they are
actually
the cool crowd. They are like,
they are the cool crowd. I mean, movie nerds in the late 90s, you're cool if you're up on the scene then,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Randy arguably is because he maybe takes it too far at his age.
Right.
But he's not a killer.
No.
And then the mom and Mickey in the second one, not nerds. I will give the third one a potential nerddom is the screenwriter. That guy's kind of a nerd. That guy's kind of a nerd. For 100%, you have a nerd.
In
the Culkin. In Rory Culkin. The Culkin. Definitely,
yeah. Rory
definitely
Culkin
a nerd.
Is the nerd. Yeah. Yeah,
I'll give outsider. I'll give five a nerd. The guy from Boys, Quaid, definite nerd. Mm-hmm. Definitely not this last one. No nerds. Well, I guess you got kind of the brother who tries to feign being a nerd. He's a virgin, all that sort of thing.
Right.
But
again,
not
it's
so
like
much.
Define nerd, right? Just because you're a virgin. Mean
quick
you're
little
nerd.
Quick little digression since we're on this Scream train. What do you feel about them picking up a new director for this next one?
I like it. I like Chris Landon. I think Christopher Landon is a good director, and I like his style. I think it marries really well with the Scream world. And if anything, I'd say his style is because he's a Scream fan. You know, I would say he is inspired most by like Kevin Williamson and Wes Craven.
Yeah. I'm ecstatic about it because I liked the last two, but I didn't love them. And I think a fresh perspective on this last one in this trilogy is exactly what it needs. And Freaky
and I
is
think
so
that's
good.
What,
wasn't that one of his latest ones? I love Freaky.
And I think that's what Landon does. I think he puts a fun spin on things that are like Happy Death Day and what you just mentioned.
Freaky.
I mean, those are you're taking something that's been done so many times and making it horror and it works so well. Yeah, I think he's got your fresh perspective, especially this far into a
the seventh,
you know, fandom. You know, I think it's a good pick.
But let's get back here. Finish up our Blackening discussion. I definitely wanted to ask you this one really quick. Which one of us is whiter?
That's a great question. Because we're both from the western suburbs of Chicago. It's a tie. I don't know. I mean, what do you define as being white?
Well, I'm kind of just being ridiculous in that I think this movie does a good job of explaining the absurdity of that question, you know?
And absolutely. I would say maybe I am because I am like, I love Mountain Dew and I love Doritos. And that makes me really white.
That's a fair point. But I am 100% Irish and you can literally see through me. So, yeah. But I guess that's more translucent than white. So, yeah, I'll give it to you.
Yeah, I'll take it. Just because, like, you know what? I'm white trash.
What? No. Well, Chicago's a fine, upstanding suburb of Chicago.
That's a funny question. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, guys. What else do we got to cover here? Oh, yeah, issues. Did you have any issues with it?
So, no, I didn't. I thought this was a really well-made movie. I would say my only issue is that they really took it an extreme post-credit scene. And I don't want to jump too far to the end, but I'm just saying I kind of was hoping they would leave it more open for another film in this franchise, because I kind of feel like we don't necessarily know what happened. You could say that, oh, he fell on the other bodies in the well, so he's still alive.
Right.
But I don't know. I
didn't get the sense that, yeah, Clifton's going to survive. It is possible because he's already survived that one, you know, bow and arrow attack, which is weird. So he, like, agreed to being shot, essentially. Was there any way he thought he wasn't going to be the one sent out? When they posed the question to send out the blackest person, did he always know it was going to be him, or was there contingencies?
Yeah. No, I think he always knew it was going to be him. And for one, Clifton, they were all saying his name wrong. I think he knew they were going to gang up on him, even though they didn't want to. And you have some really great emotional reactions. Like, even Lisa's character is like, you know, she's sorry. Yeah, we have to, I don't want to do this. And I think it was just confirming everything that he was planning. And right. It really worked out in his favor for his plan. If they didn't send him out, things may not have gone.
What do you think about the choice of crossbow as our weapon of choice?
I think it's fun, and I think it's better than just throwing in like a actual like kitchen knife, which we've seen too much. We've seen the crossbow. Yeah. We have seen that in other movies, but I think they needed to avoid.
In that it took us off the scent of Clifton a little bit, because it's such a stereotypically like white weapon, I guess you could say. I don't know, like huntery sort of weapon I think is more affiliated with somebody who's in the woods like that. Points it maybe more toward the hillbillies that it turns out to be. One issue I had, though, was the voice of the hillbilly that talked, that we at least heard talking. Because it did not match his face. It seemed too theatrically done. You know what I mean?
I think they were probably trying to, you know what? They could have easily have changed that in post too. They could maybe have like not, you know, gone with what it was. Because you don't want it to be the stereotype of like a Southern accent necessarily.
Right. Yeah. Because there's an interesting line from Shanika where she straight up says, I hate this guy's voice. So like the voice was something that's conscious in it. And it just didn't look like either of the Connor twins, like a voice that would be coming out of them. It sounded like something that maybe was like a Clifton had pre-recorded it or something. He could have put on something like that, because he does seem like the theatrical type.
Hurt to me a little. Yeah, I mean, he was sending the voice through the board game, right? He was talking through the board game. Well, what did you feel about them being able to speak telepathically to each other?
That was amazing.
Yeah,
and it pays off so well, right? Because you have the first instance in the car when they're driving there, and the girls are talking to each other about how Namdi's character has been invited, and Dwayne does not want to deal with this guy. Because that's something I wanted to mention, was I really, really enjoyed the way that they dealt with the friendship between her two characters here, Lisa and Dwayne. You know, because it's not two girlfriends. You have a gay character and a hetero girl, and they're like BFFs, right? And then he's only looking out for her, and he knows the nature of Namdi. I just felt like it was a dynamic that I believed, and I don't really feel like was rehashing something I'd seen before. And it gets back to what I was talking about before, in that you actually have solid character development of almost all of them. I would argue that the least developed is maybe Shanika. You know, I don't get a sense of what was going on with her prior.
I mean, I think she had a really great comedic character.
Yeah,
and
it's true.
you know, all the characters were funny, but I think she was sort of the really funny one who speaks her mind and tells it like it is.
Yeah.
But go back to what you were saying about Dwayne and Lisa. I think, you know, it very easily could have been a man and a woman. And Dwayne was jealous that, you know, he always wanted to be with her. So I really liked the fresh perspective and spin on it as well.
Totally.
You know?
Yes. It didn't feel contrived at all. And I think that speaks to Dwayne having been one of the writers on it, too. He was bringing fresh perspectives to something that we've seen before. Okay, let's talk about the Adderall stuff, because apparently you really liked it. And I thought it was funny a little bit. And the execution of when she actually kills people with all popped up or whatever. But there are these weird moments where the killer's not around and she's with other people and kind of like has the slow motion like look around sort of thing. And like felt like
it's not 100%
turning into a werewolf or something. The way that it felt, it was like I was immediately sucked into like, oh my gosh, is she converting into something? I know that's not what was happening. It just felt direction wise so disparate to what else was happening. I feel like it could have been done in a little bit less goofy way, and that kind of that was a moment where it felt more parody than satire to me, because I don't know, she was doing some weird things that
I
didn't love.
Completely agree that it wasn't actually accurate to what the drug does, you know.
And no!
I think it was I mean, to drive her like her focus into like that fight scene, it was great for that, but yeah, they probably could have, you know, shook it sooner and been like, okay, it's worn off, you know.
Toned
like,
it down a bit, or made it clear that she had taken way too much or something. I just damn, this is really hitting Adderall hard, but it is an abuse drug, so what can you do?
I know.
Any significance to the well in the basement? Was this just convenient? That was my other thing. It was just like, why?
Well,
is there a well in the basement?
I think, I mean, aside from like your Silence of the Lambs reference, you know, to having that in the basement, I think it was also just a easy way to move bodies where, you know, when Dave Farrow's character, Sean, disappears, it's mentioned that, oh, it was easy to just throw him down into the well instead of, you know, being able, like dragging bodies around. And so, I mean, I guess
that's true.
I guess it was a little convenient, but it didn't bother me.
Okay. That's fair.
I mean,
yeah, it didn't until I was nitpicking watching it the second time. And I was like, a little silly. And did he actually have C4? Do you think he had actually rigged explosives, or was that a bluff?
I think that was a bluff, right?
I think it was a bluff, too.
And like, when did you do that? I mean, I guess he did have access to these twins and...
And, but he only paid them $1,000 to murder seven people or whatever.
Oh, insult.
That was a great moment, too, when Dwayne finds out $1,000, that's an insult. And then he just takes it and pockets it really sly. Loved it. That was great.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was an original great movie. I see why on Ebert.com I got 3.5 stars. It's been mostly loved, which is what I'm seeing. There's nobody that's really kind of crapped on it. I'm a little worried it didn't make enough money to warrant a second film, but if it did, there is the other angle of they have all the names of who rented from the Connors house, right? These twins' house. And if you remember in the very first scene, you have the lady character that's there with Jay Farrow, who puts away their picture to put out the friend's picture. And in that initial family picture, you see the twins, but then there's like four other people there. The twins are as messed up as they are. You can assume the rest of the family's got issues. Maybe it could be a revenge story from the Connors getting back at these guys who killed them.
They did mention, though, as soon as I get there, I think it's Sheriff White or Ranger. That's right. He's not even a sheriff. Ranger. He's a ranger. It's a ranger. He's not even a cop. No, that he says they don't normally, you know, rent out to they normally rent to families.
Right.
So, yes. I mean, they almost ruined the possibility for, what you're saying. But, I mean, if you're going to do a spinoff or a story, because you don't have Jay Farrow's body, I guess, and you don't see Clifton's body. I mean, there's an opportunity there for sure. If they wanted to, they could.
Right.
Yeah. I loved that it's now something that's like a film associated with like a holiday that wasn't another cliche or thing. It's Juneteenth. That's a good point. It's not 4th of July. It's not Christmas. It's something that I hadn't seen before, and I really, really liked that.
No, same. Yeah, that was great. I mean, the premise setting up for a reunion around Juneteenth was great. I dug it real good. And even just like the small stuff, like her wearing the Rosa Parks hoodie. It was a very thoughtful movie as a whole.
Yeah.
I don't like that they trashed Android users as much as they did, because I feel like you're not going to get that as an iPhone user. It was such a funny line from Shanika where you have Clifton asking for the charger. And she's like, I thought I'd already told you, we don't support that here. Yeah. Android hate across the board.
It was a really interesting thing to double down on, though, when she first runs into Clifton at the store.
I know. I didn't get that. I like my Google phone. Darn it.
Personal thing. It's just a personal thing. Maybe they
Dwayne. I think my favorite line might have been after Namdi and our lead lady, Lisa, get together, are intimate with one another, and then they come out to the group, and Shanika says, I smell dick, but that's funny in itself. But then you hear Clifton in the background. Clifton. I think I accidentally also smelled some dick.
I loved that, too.
That was my favorite line. That got me. That was great. But that's all I got, sir. That's all I got on the Blackmans.
Here, if you haven't seen it, check it out. If we haven't ruined it too much by spoiling everything, still check it out.
Definitely.
And I hope there's more work from all of these people involved.
Amen to that. And like, subscribe, spread the word, and until then, stay